Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
The other big story, the U.S. Senate voting overwhelmingly to protect same-sex marriage. And if you think about it, about how the views of Americans changed just 26 years ago, the same Senate, of course, different senators, but the same body, voted overwhelmingly for the Defense of Marriage Act, which defined marriage between a man and a woman. So how fast things change. For things constitutional, things of this nature, we turn to Jill Hasday, who is a constitutional lawyer at the University of Minnesota. She joins us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Jill, for those who may not be familiar, can you explain what a vote like this means moving forward separately from what the Supreme Court may decide?
Okay. Well, I actually have to start with the Supreme Court just so people can understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court's decision overturning Roe placed many other 14th Amendment precedents of the Supreme Court in potential jeopardy because the court's basic theory overturning Roe in the case called Dobbs was that in thinking about what liberty the 14th Amendment protects, we need to ask ourselves, what would the men who ratified the 14th Amendment in 1868 have thought they were doing? And the court says those men wouldn't have thought they were placing limits on abortion rights, so Roe's overturned. That same theory places a lot of other Supreme Court decisions in jeopardy, because, for instance, did the men behind the 14th Amendment think that they were prohibiting interracial marriage or same-sex marriage? No, they probably didn't. So that gave new urgency for Congress to act, because these earlier Supreme Court decisions, so, for instance, in 1967, the court had held that the 14th Amendment requires states to recognize interracial marriage. Or in 2015, the court had held the 14th Amendment requires states to recognize same-sex marriage. But now all those precedents are potentially in doubt. So that's the background to the statute. And what the statute does is it says that for purposes of federal law, the federal government will recognize same-sex marriages and will recognize interracial marriages. So if you are married in a state and interracially or in a same-sex relationship, the federal government will recognize your marriage for purposes of Social Security, immigration, taxes, federal taxes, etc. It also says, this law, that states have to give full faith and credit to each other's marriages. So suppose a same-sex couple marries in Minnesota. The Supreme Court has overturned the idea that there's constitutional protection for same-sex marriage. So that couple travels to another state that doesn't allow same-sex marriage. This bill says that if you get into a car accident in Texas or whatever, Texas has to treat you as married. They have to extend full faith and credit to your marriage from another state.
So you get to visit, Jill, it's Jordana, thanks for joining us. So, and things that give a spouse, get the spouse privilege are visiting a loved one or a spouse in the hospital, if God forbid.
Right. Which could be relevant in a car accident,
yes,
et cetera.
So, exactly.
Okay. So this is, in some ways, it's a very sad moment that this needs to be codified. But on the other hand, it is an important step forward. I would say that the federal government can definitely say, for federal purposes, we're recognizing same-sex marriages and interracial marriages, and I don't think there's any possible argument. There's somewhat of a debate about whether Congress can require states to give full faith and credit to marriages that maybe one state says violates my public policy. That's an ongoing debate, and if the Supreme Court were to overturn constitutional protection for same-sex marriage and some states were to prohibit same-sex marriage, there would be litigation on whether that Congress could actually require, say, an anti-same-sex marriage state to recognize the same-sex marriage from another state. So that would have to be worked out, and no one really knows how that would be resolved.
Jill Hasday is a law professor at the U of M, dealing in constitutional law as well as family law and sexual equality. I think a lot of questions that people have, Jill, is why wasn't this done to abortion rights prior to the Dobbs decision?
Oh, well, I mean, I think the main answer is the votes, right? You have to have, there's almost no limit on what Congress could do in the abortion context if it wanted to. Congress has the power to regulate interstate commerce, and I think very clearly that power allows Congress to codify a right to abortion or to prohibit abortion nationwide. But it just hasn't had the votes. That's the obstacle. Just like another question you could ask is, why did it take so long for Congress to enact the Respective Marriage Act? Part of it was there wasn't the urgency, but also, you know, it wasn't clear there were the votes.
I want to go back to the interracial marriage question. It's my understanding that interracial marriage has been legal in all the states since 1967.
Right, because the Supreme Court required it.
Oh, and then it was okay, I understand. So then that protection was rolled back.
Right, at the time, I'll say a few things. So at the time of Loving versus Virginia in 1967, 16 states mm-hmm. still prohibited interracial marriage. Mm-hmm. I will say that the interracial marriage precedents aren't in arguably as much jeopardy as, say, the same-sex marriage precedents, because interracial marriage both implicates the fundamental right to marry, and even if the court gets rid of that idea, it's also race discrimination, because it's explicitly racially classifying people. And there's reason to think that the court's not willing to roll back its prohibitions on race discrimination. So I don't think the Loving versus Virginia precedent, which requires states to recognize interracial marriage, is really in jeopardy. Certainly not the same kind of jeopardy as the same-sex marriage precedent.
And the likelihood of that, Jill, that the Supreme Court would revisit that? Justice Thomas certainly tipped the hand a bit when the Dobbs decision was released.
So Justice Thomas, in his concurrence in Dobbs, that's the decision overruling Roe, he says, yeah, we should revisit all of this. We should revisit Obergefell, which is the 2015 case requiring states to recognize same-sex marriage. We should revisit Griswold, which is a case saying states can't criminalize access to birth control. Majority didn't say that. I mean, I can see it two ways. On the one hand, the logic of Dobbs, this idea that we read the liberty protection of the 14th Amendment by what the men behind the 14th Amendment in 1868 have thought, does place all these decisions in jeopardy. At the same time, I think the court hasn't quite decided how far it's going to go. And one of the things that's going to determine it is how much pushback the court gets. So, for instance, public opinion polls have shown that popular confidence in the court has dropped by 20 points, which is in 2 years, which is an enormous mm-hmm. decline. And for instance, Justice Alito has said publicly, like, I don't care at all, but I just don't think that's true. Of course they care. Mm-hmm. All the Supreme Court really has is our willingness to listen to it. So I suspect that sort of backlash to Dobbs might make the court more cautious, but time will tell.
I'm just looking at some stats, Jill. 70% of Americans support gay marriage. That's a record number, including 55% of Republicans. For interracial marriage, 94% of Americans are in favor. Quite frankly, I can't believe that's only 94% are in favor of that. But we have to remember, only 4% approved that in 1958. Yet, 36 senators voted against this bill. Why this isn't a religious issue? This isn't saying your church has to support gay marriage or your synagogue has to support gay marriage. This is just about recognizing the rights as a spouse. Why do you think 36 senators voted against it?
You know, I'm not a political analyst. It is striking. On the other, I mean. Right. It's a glass half empty, glass half full. On the one hand, you got, I think it was 12 or 15 Republican senators. On the other hand, it is in some ways, it's remarkably controversial given how popular opinion appears to have mm-hmm. shifted. Mm-hmm. I also just want to pick up something you said in your comments, which is, so there's some other interesting features of the statute I didn't mention. One is that the statute, and this was, I think, important to get the Republican votes, is that it explicitly says the statute shouldn't be interpreted to limit any religious liberty arguments. So, for instance, the statute explicitly says even though we, the federal government, are saying we're recognizing same-sex marriage, we're not going to take any action against a church that, for its purposes, refuses to recognize same-sex marriage. So, for instance, you won't lose your tax-exempt status if you, as a church, won't recognize same-sex marriage or perform same-sex marriage. So there's a way, and from a certain perspective, of course, some people would say that's accommodating discrimination. So you can see, I think the statute has both arguably progressive and conservative elements. The other thing I want to point out that's interesting is it explicitly says the federal government is not recognizing polygamous marriages, meaning marriages with more than two people. I think that clearly reflects popular opinion. There's no polygamy marriage movement, but it's hard to predict the future. But I could imagine 100 years from now, people looking back at the statute and talking about the discrimination against polygamous marriages as popular opinion changes.
I'm glad you pointed that out about those because the some Republicans have used that argument that saying they're going to come after churches because of that. So I'm glad you pointed that out. One last question for you, Jill, and it's this. And you mentioned about popular opinion of the Supreme Court and their decisions supposed to be separate from what the popular opinion is, or at least what Congress votes on. That being said, I mean, would this deter cases from coming before the Supreme Court that would challenge gay marriage? Does this ruling maybe give some hesitancy to people who wanted to bring that before the Supreme Court?
Well, I mean, you only need one party to want to bring a case, so I don't think it'll bring some hesitancy. That said, the court has actually very explicitly wrestled with this tension. On the one hand, they don't want to say we're just listening to politics, because at a certain point, then why have the court, right? The legislature can just listen to politics. On the other hand, you can't understand the court's decisions without seeing it in context. So, for instance, you would never have gotten Obergefell, the 2015 case requiring same-sex marriage throughout the nation, without the gay rights movement. It's just impossible. The court is always responding to social movements. Similarly, Loving versus Virginia, which is recognizing interracial marriages throughout the nation, that's basically the last step in dismantling Jim Crow segregation, which starts with Brown. And again, without the African-American freedom struggle, you just don't have it. So the court is always aware of popular opinion, and I think realistically the fact that Congress is going on board in one direction counts for something, but that doesn't necessarily mean it counts for everything or it's going to be determinative.
Jill Hasday, constitutional lawyer over at the U. Thank you for being so educated about this and answering my somewhat simplistic questions. Adam's were much more nuanced, but I really appreciate you breaking it down for us.
Thank you, Jill.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. It really is interesting. And she really puts us into the future with that question she asked us, Adam. You know, 100 years from now, are people going to look at this and say, oh my gosh, they were so, what would the word be against polygamy? Anti-polygamous.
Well, 100, you said 100 years. This is 25 years ago. They changed the view on this. And it's amazing how fast it's changed.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.